Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Sunday roundtable. It is Sunday, July 31st, 2016. Our subject is love, the golden text, Leviticus. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Okay, any comments on
the
text? Go ahead, Betty.
When I was reading this morning, it just really hit me. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Which to me, this is not some little nicey nice thing. This is really, really important. I really mean it kind of thing. Is the impression I got. It was not, you will if you can, or, you know, if it's convenient, this is something you need to do. So there.
Yeah, the dog agrees. No, that's very good. Thank you. Yeah, I'm not kidding around. I am the Lord. You love your neighbor as yourself. And as we've talked about, as yourself, you have to love yourself before you can love your neighbor. And to think that you can love your neighbor more than yourself is what?
It doesn't make sense.
Well, that's true. It's all self. Because God's love is impartial, and if you don't understand that or get that, you could even try, you know, in an altruistic way to love others more than yourself and put yourself down and do all of this. But God's love is impartial, and it is important that we love our neighbors as ourselves. And that's true. I'm talking about individually, but as nations too, you know, the fact that we are trillions and trillions of dollars in debt is a serious sign that something's wrong. So we need to heal the wounds within and love ourselves as we love our neighbors. And then we'll all be blessed. Everyone will be blessed because these are principles. I am the Lord, as Betty said. So last week we talked about being the image and likeness of all the synonyms of God, however you'd like to say it, the son, the daughter, the image and likeness. So today I'd like to hear from you as to what it means to you to be the image and likeness of love. You should be working with these daily.
I got a real sense that it was a very active word. I keep getting the sense that a lot of the qualities were active, and then gratitude came to me that was love, and that action, and Miss Betty says action expresses more gratitude than speech. And then I also thought of grace, and she goes on to say that what we need is the prayer of fervent desire for growth in grace, expressed in patience, meekness, love, and good deeds. And the habitual struggles to be good is unceasing prayer. So to me, that was a very active sense of quality.
Thank you. Very true. Love is in action, isn't it? It is in action, not just theorizing. And I also like the idea that it is gratitude. So think about that, because when you're grateful, you are also in what kind of state?
Faith. Joyful and active.
Receptive.
All of those.
I'm safe.
Oh, and Ava said something.
She said patience.
And Ava knows.
Ava knows. People need patience.
I think someone said safe. That's what I've heard.
Yes. That's what Mrs. Betty said. When she sees a grateful student, she knows that he or she is safe. Why would that be?
Because you're being humble and you're grateful for what God gave you, and there's no pride in it. And so you are in a much safer place.
Yes. Well, that's right. Yes. True gratitude to God is an instant connection with God. If you're feeling that you can't feel his presence or you're not connected, start counting your blessings, and you will. Gratitude is also a loving state, because you can't be grateful and be hateful, can you? No. Gratitude is wonderful, and it does bring about, as I think Betty just said, humility too. All of those are extremely important qualities.
And the reason it's safe is because when you are grateful, you are open to hear what God has to say to you. And not only do you hear the good that he has for you, but you also hear the warnings that he gives you of impending danger. That's why it's safe, because you will hear the warnings before you get into trouble or before the danger manifests. That's why it's safe.
It'll keep you from temptation when you're grateful. If you're not grateful, you will be tempted, and you'll say, oh, well, God doesn't love me, or, he didn't answer my prayer last night, so what the heck, I'm going to do whatever. When you're grateful, you couldn't possibly. It's sort of, sometimes I liken it to a child and a parent. When a child is truly grateful for their parent or parents, they wouldn't disobey. They are grateful. They're loving. All of those things. You couldn't be otherwise. You're also obedient, which is probably one of the most important things.
There's so much more with this love. The greatest thing in the world, it mentions guilelessness, sincerity.
No envy and no pride.
Thank you so much.
Right? There is. I would recommend that book to everyone, The Greatest Thing in the World by Henry Drummond. It's on Amazon. You can Google it. If you don't have it, you should have it.
Well, we do offer it.
Oh, we do offer it, too? Okay. Oh, good. We offer it, too. So, just check Benjamin.
And if you go to Joseph's Corner, he has a reading.
Thank you. Joseph has a reading of it on Joseph's Corner. A wonderful thing to read, to listen to really take in to your inner being. It is the most important thing. And the love with a capital L, divine love. But there's one aspect of love we haven't talked about.
Unselfish love, I think, maybe.
Certainly unselfish, yes. Tough love.
Principle.
You can't have real love without that. The other masquerades as love, and it is not love. Because it doesn't care. It doesn't care enough to take action. Tough love cares enough about the other person, motivated by God to help a situation. Whether the person will like, of course, usually the person doesn't like you when you express tough love. They can actually feel like they hate you. But that doesn't matter. Love loves no matter what. And it's an often overlooked attribute of love. You've got to have principle with love, or it is not love.
I know I was quite the enabler before coming here, so I am grateful to learn how to be about these things.
Thank you. And he is now. And you feel that love. If you see someone in danger, it is love that motivates you. If you saw a little child running out in the road, you would stop it. You wouldn't say, oh, I have to be loving. I don't want to hurt his feelings or whatever.
Love is not letting people do whatever they want to do.
So Mrs. Eddy says a lot about that and about being willing to rebuke. And at the end of the class, I'm going to read from a book called Miscellaneous Documents Relating to Christian Science, one that Barry had told me about. And it has a lot of things Mrs. Eddy said. Most of them were in the late 1800s, early. But anyway, they're very interesting, and she mentions that too. Because so often in the culture, as we call it, people just want to be loving, 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 and never address error. It just simply does not work. And it's a cop-out, and it's cowardice, and it is not love with a capital L.
That's one thing that my son has learned to appreciate now. He says things like, nobody ever cared about him enough before to keep him away from doing all those things that he was doing. And he says that he really appreciates that Lori and I have been basically on him so much about, you know, his behavior and that, and kind of strict with him. We really needed to be strict with him at first because he had gone so far astray. But now it seems like we don't have to be as strict with him because he's learned to appreciate that change in behavior. He's starting to see there's more joy in it. So we were able to kind of turn him around just by being more strict with him. It was painful for him, and we had a tough time at first, but he really appreciates it now, and he said he's grateful for it.
It's wonderful, and if you were here Wednesday, you heard Luann's testimony about this boy. What a transformation, and what a big help, and how respectful he is now, when at one time he was not. And it wasn't easy. I remember Luann calling and telling me about how, you know, he wouldn't listen. He was so said terrible things to her, and, you know, the whole bit. But she loved enough to remain tough. And now he's grateful. I mean, I'm grateful to Mrs. Evans for her being so relentlessly tough on me. When anyone else would have said, oh, she's fine, she's okay, she's doing all right. But Mrs. Evans knew I wasn't, because she saw past the facade. So, and when you're in that divine love, you can't help but correct what's wrong. Just can't help it.
Lori even went to his school and sat in his classroom next to him in his school when he was throughout the day because he was disrespecting the teachers. So she would go and sit in a chair right next to his desk at school all day long, following around school.
See, and that's love. And I remember hearing a story about Bella. Right? She did the same thing with one of her sons. Was giving, and this was before she ever even knew of Christian Science, wasn't it? She's here today, but her son was not doing what he should, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. So she went to school and followed him around, made him obey. That is love. So a great, great aspect of love is the toughness and the principle. Cannot make go hand in hand.
Sometimes before I kind of withdraw from showing tough love to their children or to their friends or to their neighbors or somebody they work with in the office when the opportunity comes, is because of fear. The fear of losing that person's friendship if they confront that person. That kind of love, or they are afraid of losing their children, or do something that will dent the relationship they have with their children. For that reason, they prefer to go the other way of love by being so loving and not being tough about it, even when they know that child is going the wrong way. Like the lesson says, love thy neighbor as thyself. If you see your neighbor's child that lives next door or next house to you, and that child is going the wrong way of life, and as an adult, you know where that is going to lead that child to. I refuse to love that child so much that that child will come out of such behavior. In the eyes of God, that's sinful because you're not obeying that command. And you're not loving.
That's right.
If you cannot do that to your own child, if you can't watch your child go the wrong way, why would you make your neighbor's child to go the wrong way or fight? To me, that's sin.
You never breathe an immoral atmosphere unless an attempt to purify it. And the sentence before that, which I don't have memorized, but she talks about rebuking Ira. And that's written in stone, engraved in stone, at the Mother Church extension, above the readers. So we have a moral responsibility. That doesn't mean that you go around yelling at people and going into saying this, that. No. No, it has to be absolutely God-directed. There's a big difference because we know people that do that too, and that's human
body,
busybody, human courage—not moral courage, but animal courage.
I think if we pray about it, God will provide opportunities for you to do it.
Right, and very often it can be done with great kindness.
And also, I mean, to know in your thinking, knowing the truth about man, this is what I got from this whole thing, like your thinking is most important. When there's trouble somewhere, are you seeing the same trouble and therefore, you know, attaching it to someone, or are you knowing the opposite truth, which we are taught to know? What Jesus did, went everywhere seeing truth, seeing the Christ everywhere.
Yes.
And also, one more thing. When somebody says, it's not my business, I'm not going to interfere with that person's life, with that person's relationship, or with that child's life, at some point it will become your business, because at some point, one way or the other, it will become your business, because if that child or that friend of yours continue to behave or do things that you know very well it's not good, you will not be at peace, because you will remember there was a time you have opportunity to talk about it. But if you make it your business and you pray about it, there's always an opportunity for you to talk to that person in a very loving way. You know, at work, I've seen that work with me, and you will see change in that person's life, and that person will be grateful to you. Like,
right, it's caring. If it comes into your experience, your first duty is to correct it in your thought, mentally. And if God tells you to do something else, then you do. But that you must do. If it's in your experience, you've got to take care of it. You can't ignore it.
And if it's in your experience, that means that you're capable of taking care of it.
Yeah.
God doesn't bring something into your experience that you're not capable of taking care of. There's no formula for this, but the test is love God and hate evil. It's that simple. And when you think about how tough love is, remember the statement in Science and Health where Mrs. Eddy says, divine life, truth, and love are a law of annihilation to everything unlike themselves. And that's what each one of us should be. We should be a law of annihilation to everything that is unlike life, truth, and love.
And if you're living it, you will be. Mrs. Eddy says she loved even the blade of grass beneath her feet. And you feel, you'll look out on the universe, look out on the world during your watches or just when you're in your room looking out the window, look out with compassion and love. Because all, God is infinite mind and it's infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. There's nothing but Him. So see Him everywhere and love that perfect idea of God. And you will find anything not right will leave your experience in some way or the other. That's the compassion. That's what Mrs. Eddy did on her porch swing in the evening when she was doing her evening watch. And if any of you think you can't do this, because I used to think I couldn't, the definition of man in recapitulation, part of it's in the lesson, man is idea, the image of love. That means you are idea. You are the image of love. And it's not love with a lowercase, it's love with an uppercase, divine love. So if you think you can't love, you just have to know you can claim it as a child of God. And you can change your course, as Mrs. Eddy says, and begin loving. And you'll find the more you do, the more you can, the more it's in you. And she also says that, you know, it's the heart and soul of science. So without it, science is nothing. It's got to be. Whatever you do must be from the standpoint of love.
You must claim it, right?
Yes, you claim it, because it's part of all of our inheritance. That's why to tell yourself in the morning that I am the daughter, the son, the child of love, with a capital L. Now, what about he that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him? 1 John, what does that mean?
If you approach one with love, if you love another, it opens the every life for you. I mean, that's life. Love is life.
Yes, thank you.
If you love your brother, you're not going to try to use him or do wrong by him.
That's right.
And if you love your brother, that is a very clear indication that you love God. When you love your brother as God's image and likeness, that proves that you love God. When you love God, you're safe. You're receptive to all the light that God has for you.
And if you can't love your brother, it doesn't matter what you say, you also don't love God. I don't care what you say. Mrs. Evans used to often talk about the loner thought. And the loner thought was one who just wanted to be by themselves all the time. It's easy to be by yourself and feel loving when you're not among anybody. But we're pretty well admonished to be out among people. That's the test. That's what the greatest thing in the world says, too. The beautiful thing that Fairley put on this forum by Henry Drummond, an excerpt from that, where it says you can't retreat. You've got to be out with people. That's the test. Can you be loving? Can you control your thought and not be hateful, revengeful, jealous, envious? Or can you maintain your thought and love God's creation? So
I think it goes back to fear, because I think a lot of people who hold back from going out to people or using paper, they have this fear of not make a mistake or put themselves in a position where they have to face the challenge to love.
Exactly.
So like, oh, I'd rather stay home.
Rather stay home.
But that thought alone is...
It's all wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong. The first step.
And I was so much like this. I was a loner. I just liked to stay home with my own family where I could misbehave or do whatever. And when I met Mrs. Evans, that did not wash, man. I had to be out with people, and I had to be out with people a lot. Not just a little bit, but a lot. And it was the hardest thing for me to do that. But it was the best thing. And that was, again, her tough love. She wouldn't let me hide out in my house. And that tough love... and I'd be out and I'd get some severe rebukes for not controlling my thought, but I learned. And it was hard, and I didn't like it, but it was the best thing that could have happened to me, was tough love. So don't be afraid to be out with people and to gauge yourself. How are you doing? That's why we have a church. That's why we have opportunities to work together on Bible studies and other things. to get along with each other, not get your feelings hurt or get offended by something. And if you need to speak to someone out of love and kindness, you should. It's all part of loving your brother.
And in addition to that, Mrs. Evans would often encourage everybody in the church to open their houses,
yeah,
to invite people in, to do something to, you know, welcome other people. And there were people in the church who didn't want to do that. They didn't want to open their doors. They didn't want people to see what was actually inside their house.
Absolutely.
And Mrs. Evans would refer to, you know, she would often ask, you know, what are you doing behind closed doors? You know, when your doors are closed and nobody's watching you, you know, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Is it different from the appearance that you're putting on when you're in front of other people? And if it's different, then you've got a problem. So she was, you know, people accused her of interfering with their personal lives. But it was all part of the training. There wasn't anything human about it.
And it should not, you should not have to take a week to clean your house before you have someone over. That shows something wrong, too. You can't order things. And if it takes a week and you don't want to have people over because your house is such a mess, we'll address that. Find out what, you know, watch out what's in your home, because it all relates. And these are ways of living where you're open and you're going to feel so much better. This isn't an attack on anyone. This is to help you. I speak from my experience. Boy, did it change me. The other thing that there is no occasion for stumbling in him. If you are hating or resenting or anything else your brother, don't be surprised if you fall on your butt. I mean, literally, or face. When you're irritated, be aware of that.
Hello.
Sometimes it's maybe not you hating, but maybe someone is hating you, but there's something going on. So handle it that way. Go ahead, Florence.
No, I was just going to say, sooner or later, if you don't handle it, it will show up in some physical something.
It will.
And then you say, oh, well, look what happened to me, all these things happening to me, but you've ignored the things, the real things happening.
Right.
Right. And in some cases, it may not happen to you, but it may happen to someone in your family, one of your children, which is,
I have to go back to what I was saying before. If you are hearing somebody, you know, that's the worst thing somebody can do, because you are producing hate to somebody, and you can harm that person. Why would you do that? You just cannot harm anybody.
You harm yourself.
Yeah. So when you hit somebody, you're not wishing that person well. They can harm that person. And you miss opportunity that you can save that person. I'm just not hearing that person.
And when you are not loving, you are malpracticing. And when you're malpracticing, any malpractice from anyone else can reach you. That's why you could literally stumble, fall. Or you could stumble perhaps at work and make some stupid mistake and lose your job. Or you could stumble in many other ways. I mean, stumble can be applied to many different ways. But I remember once, several years ago, when ice skating, I took a very bad fall. And before that happened, before I'd gone ice skating, I had taken a phone call, which had been very disturbing. And I hadn't handled it properly. And I knew that's what it was. It wasn't anything else. It wasn't just some random thing that happened. I hadn't cleared my thought of that disturbing phone call. And because of that, I stumbled. So watch these things. Is it Vic Del Young who says, if you cut your finger, handle?
Malpractice.
Animal magnetism. Yes. All of those things. And animal magnetism is what?
A belief in a power apart from God.
Thank you. You are believing in a power apart from God. So after that phone call, I was, you know, I let it disturb me. So be wise. Watch your thought. This is what it means to stand quarter at the door of thought. Don't let things disturb you. You handle it, knowing the truth about it. There is no power apart from God. You go back to your oneness with Him. And Dale did, that was a lovely testimony she gave Wednesday about a beautiful article in our latest magazine by Parsons, really telling you how to watch and how Esther watched and how she saved the day by watching. So this is the importance of all of you watching, because it'll teach you how to control your thinking and align yourself up with the all power of God. So this story about, well, this statement about stumbling. So let's go into David. What was happening with him in this lesson? And how did he keep from stumbling?
He loved. Loved the Saul because that kept him from... He said, I will not do this to him. When he cut off his skirt, he said... He felt very guilty. He said, I can't do that to my Lord or whatever.
Well, he thought Saul had been appointed by God. That was his feeling. So he was not going to kill him, even though Saul had been trying to kill him.
And David never thought Saul was his enemy.
Thank you. He refused. Be an enemy.
He refused to hate.
When the opportunity was there for him. He had every reason.
He had every reason to hate, but he refused to hate. He was kept from stumbling. And if a few weeks ago it had the story of Abigail in the Bible class about that, and how David was very, very tempted to hate Abigail's husband, Naaman.
Nabal.
Oh, sorry, Nabal. Yes, thank you. But because of Abigail talked sense to him, and he restrained and didn't. And that was a lesson well learned. So watch yourself. I don't care what anyone does to you. I don't care how awful it is. You can go on and on about it. You don't hate them. And it's up to us to forgive them. The Bible in this week's lesson says, love your enemies so that what?
You have no enemies.
That's Mrs. Eddy says that. When you love your enemies, you have no enemies. But in the Bible, Jesus says, love your enemies and you will what?
That you may be children of your Father, which is in heaven.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we started off the class saying, I'm a child of love, okay? You cannot be a child of love if you're hating. Therefore, you can't be a child of God. There are some rules here that you've got to obey if you want to come under those blessings. Thank you, Shardy. Yes, and fairly. You have to be you're going to love your enemy, you will be a child of God. As hard as that sometimes is.
When I was going through a divorce, I refused to hate, and it really saved.
Thank you. I'm sure there are others of you who can say that. I know for myself, too. And I refused to hate. It saved me. I would have been destroyed if I hated. That's a stumbling block. You'll just be all of the... You start hating, and then all the hate around you starts pouring into you, and then you have more to hate.
It is awful. I used to feel like I was going to light on fire. Well, there's no way out. I mean, it's a vicious cycle. It can't ever call itself.
But the good news is, the flip side is that the more you love, that's just as progressive.
Yes, it is.
But in an upward way.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely right. That's why it is such a bloody waste of time to do the other. Because you could be, instead of descending a horrible spiral and putting yourself deeper and deeper into a hole, you could be ascending upward. So
Jesus' words are so wonderful. I mean, when he goes on to say or he maketh his, the Father maketh his Son to rise on the evil and on the good, sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. It's just that Jesus was such a wonderful teacher.
Yes, thank you. That is divine love. It loves everyone equally. It sees, it doesn't see a sinner, doesn't see race or doctrine or creed. Divine love, it just loves. And the more we do that, it's the same with us. We won't see sinners, we won't see sick people, we won't see races or doctrines or all of this other stuff. All we'll see is God's image and likeness. But that takes work to get there. You don't start saying, oh, I love everybody. In the meantime, obviously you're hating people. You've got to work on that one, okay? Make sure that you're there.
Well, if somebody hates you, if somebody hates you and you don't hate that person back, you continue to love that person, at some point, you open to that person, the person begins to see who you are.
Yes.
You begin to see that you're not actually hating him back, and you begin to change that person's life for good. I mean, the story of David and the Saul was an example of that. Saul was, he didn't go back, he was continuing to hate David, thinking that David was his rival, was his problem. And his problem was somewhere else, the Philistines. But he thought David was part of it, because he thought that David was about to take his throne and become the king of Israel. Which is true. Even though David never knew that, David never knew he was going to be a king. But because he continued to love, which was a big training for him, his love of Saul was a big training. He continued to make him stronger to the point when Saul began to see it in him that he is going to be the king.
Yep.
Now I know that you are going to be the king.
And that is true promotion, my friends. When you pass these tests, and I don't care how long it takes you to go through, I mean, David went through years of this, God does the promoting. God knows what's in your heart. God knows if you're overcoming all of these problems in your workplace or home or wherever it seems to be. And if you keep doing what's right and keep turning to your Father, when the time comes, you'll be promoted out of there in some way, as David was. So these are important points. And there's no other way to get promoted. You can humanly get promoted, and eventually it will fail. In the lesson, Mrs. Eddy says, when he commissions a messenger, it is one who is spiritually near himself. No person can misuse this mental power if he is taught of God to discern it. And then again, the same fountain cannot send forth both sweet waters and bitter. When God does commission someone, when that person is receptive to God, you cannot misuse it because you understand it. If you misuse it, it will rend you. It will turn on you.
I think it's you. It's your power.
Yes. Very dangerous.
And if you try to misuse it, it just shows that you don't fully understand it in the first place.
And then there you go.
There you go.
Now, there's a lot more in this lesson, but one being your advancing course may provoke envy, but it will also attract respect. That was what happened to David, because I was going to have Jeremy talk on that, but he went upstairs. But he, you know, the reason that, one of the reasons, and Benjamin brought it out too, Saul was so jealous of David. So there again, thou shalt not covet. Commandments are very important to obey. And I don't care what your excuse is for not obeying them. It's not good enough. They're just excuses. Obey God's law, and you will find.
And ultimately, David's principled love for Saul changed Saul, Benjamin said. It brought Saul to tears at the sin that Saul had been committing, pursuing David.
The Bible says when you do that, when you love your enemy, you're like pouring coals on his head. He can't understand it. So, always.
Overcome evil with good.
Yes. Overcome evil with good. You will be clad in the panoply of love, where human hatred cannot reach you.
What is a panoply?
Cover.
Covering.
A protective covering.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to read a few things because I wanted to get into this from miscellaneous documents. This is Mrs. Eddy speaking in one of her sermons. She began her sermon with these words. The chemist comes out of his laboratory with his fingers all bleeding from a broken retort, and that's a glass. I will have to put the rest of this in my own language. This is someone speaking. I think it was Janet Coleman. So anyway, she says she's going to have to put it in her own language. She said, if the retort had been whole, he would not have been cut. He would not have cut his fingers. Mrs. Eddy said that all religions have some good in them. She named Mohammedanism, Buddhism, and others. Did not speak of any of them of our day, but she said they did not have the whole robe or garment, so they would be like the broken retort that would cut their fingers. We must have on the undivided garment, or we would cut our fingers. So, if we accept this science in part, it would be like the broken retort, liable to cut the fingers. What does that mean?
It would hurt instead of bless.
Yes, absolutely. We know that science is the complete revelation.
If you try to take parts of this science to suit your own satisfaction and deny other parts of this science as being too hard or too, you know, or something that you just don't want, you're going to cut yourself.
Thank you.
You're going to be sorely disappointed.
A lot of people complain about science because of that. Oh, it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. Well, Mrs. Eddy talks about the undivided garment. You have to take the whole thing. You can't dabble in it. You can't just say, I want God when I'm sick and the heck with him the rest of the time. There are other ways that you take, divide it and not take the whole garment. So think about what this is saying, and this is a lot of what our roundtable is about, to make sure you understand what that whole garment is and that you embrace it entirely. If you do that, you will grow and have success in this science. And if you don't, and if you're a dabbler, you will not.
And Dorley says in his book that I was just reading that if you misuse science or dabble, it'll kick you in the face. That was quite strong, but it was very
good.
Pointed. Yeah, just don't mess around with it. You can't take it apart.
No, you cannot. Better you just do something else unless you want to really embrace it. And I think it's the greatest thing there is. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it's also what Mrs. Eddy is talking about in Pond and Purpose, the three stages. Sometimes in the first stage, you get so hot, and then you're like, oh, God, no, I'm, you know, what is this and stuff. Instead of coming with our all, to just go through whatever it takes and then really get all the blessing.
Thank you.
It's sacred.
It is. It's sacred, yes.
We must take it as he's given to us.
Yes.
Just like Jesus told his disciples, when all is said and done, when the Last Supper, when, you know, it felt like they are ready, and he gave them the cup and told them, this is my blood.
You know, I was given the...
I haven't finished yet.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he told them, this is my blood, but he told them to drink all of it. He didn't tell them to drink half.
Right.
He told them to drink all of it, which includes sacrifice they're going to make. Even when it's going to be tough on them, they have to be ready for it.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's what Mercedes also commanded us. You can't just tell them it's business and choose right to feed us. We must take everything, including the sacrifice.
That's right. And you can't run from them. Go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry to interrupt you, Benjamin, but I was just thinking of you because I'm filling out the membership form for this church, and I'm the one to give that to you, and I have it for you in my car. And on the membership form, it says something that struck me. If Mrs. Eddy wrote it, only when you are ready and see that Christian Science is the only way, or do we really want you to sign this thing?
And that's the only requirement.
Oh, my God, I really got to commit. I'm a committer from way back when. So I said, this is the only way, because I've been rather desperate lately, what with divorce hanging in the balance. I've been given a kind of a gift of desperation, so that, like a drowning man, I'm going to reach for that as if it was a life preserver, and I had no problem finding that thing. Any other time in my life, it would have been a big deal. You know, I wouldn't have been able to do it because I could never commit to anything 100%.
Thank you. And that is the value of suffering and trials. Save, Lord, or I perish. Never fear that. Go ahead, sorry.
I wanted to say that committing is love, you know. When we're able to take that stand and say, yes, God, you take me all the way. I believe what you have to say. And not that we go through negotiations with God. That doesn't work.
Thank you very much. That is excellent.
Good point.
Committing is love. That is so true. Committing is love. And whether that's when you get married, you take those vows. Through the bad times, the good times, you commit yourself. You're not just going to run at the first problem. That is love.
As I said, why many people not coming to church today? Why many people just stay home and either watch the movie or go to the gym on Sunday or any time? For me, I think it's because they feel like they're not ready to come in.
Absolutely,
yes. A lot is required from them. They think they're not ready. When they are ready, which usually they never are ready.
And they don't realize the tremendous blessings that they will get. Okay, well, there's more from this book that I will have to do next week. I wanted to end on a couple things. I put this on the forum, but I'll read it anyway. This one is by Janet Coleman, who says, I can say one thing truthfully, that if I were asked today, after all my experiences with our leader, which was the greatest of them, I could say this. I always found her loving her enemies, always ready to do them good, always would see those who had injured her if she could help them before anyone who had been loving to her. And then also this, also from Janet Coleman's recollections. Mrs. Eddy, a few extracts from Mother's letters. Make broader your bounds for blessing the people. Learn to forget that which you should not remember, namely self, and live for the good you do. Let this be your motto, to seek to be least and to be a servant. Speak of the founder of Christian Science and note her self-sacrifice and give testimony as the way in Christian Science. Seek to be meek. Little children, love one another. Okay.
Amen.
We will have a wonderful service. So glad you all could join us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.